Hey Keshav, I read a quote recently. Sometimes magic is just someone spending more time on something than anyone else, by Raymond Joseph Teller.
This is so beautiful. But I'm worried that with now design being taken more seriously, there is an ongoing imbalance right now in the industry.
Yes. Though firms have now realized the power of design, I feel there's this lack of space for new ideas to breathe.
Yes, designers these days are stuck between driving conversion rates and running businesses. They feel like someone is stopping them to work at their full potential, as creativity takes time.
It's true. Designers need to fight for this so that their job could feel creative and fun, as it was in the past. Because ideas come to us mostly when we are not doing anything, just sitting idle.
Yes, though the industry is moving very fast, we should not let it lose its true spirit, which made it special in the first place.
For sure. With this, we would like to welcome Prashant Shanmugam, an interaction designer at Google, a firm that welcomes creativity and is every designer's dream. Designing digital products for over 7 years across various domains, like investment banking, telecommunication, he's worn a lot of hats in his designing journey. A design mentor at ADP List and Design, his journey is like surfing in an ocean with many waves on the way. Having worked with Microsoft as a product designer for 2 years, we are very excited to welcome Prashant Shanmugam, an interaction designer at Google, a place where most dreams end. Welcome to 9 Degrees, exploring new angles.
Hey Prashant, I'm glad to have you on the show. So, how have you been lately?
Hey Keshav, I'm very good. How are you?
I am great as well, exploring UX design and doing a lot of stuff. So yeah, it's pretty exciting for me. So you're currently working as an interaction designer at Google. So how's the work culture there?
Basically, Google is a big company right now. The designers' growth is like, you know, they have been massively increasing. We currently have around 4,000 designers worldwide. So I'd say it's a pretty large number in compared to other companies, right? So the good thing about Google is every team has their own set of rules, how to design and then how to get the things vetted with the senior designers, how a process happens within the team. So it's like every team has their own thing, and then they kind of work like a startup. So though they are a big company, they're still working like a startup, you know, very fast, agile, and then they have their own terms. They have their own review processes for design. So yeah, I think I would mention that, you know, it's like a startup culture within a big company, is what I would say.
So it's kind of like a tree branching out, if we can look at it that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So every product is like huge. Let's say if you take search, there are at least 100 designers working on search, different parts of search and different verticals of search. And then if you take Assistant, yeah, or if you take Chrome, if you take YouTube, like everything has like, you know, huge value addition that every designer brings in. And then so they have a big team of designers. So they kind of create their own culture. They have their own values. They have their own, you know, nice things to, you know, do with the team. So it's like if you move from one team to another, it's like a totally different culture. Or, you know, it's like you are working on a different company altogether. So it's like a very startup-y thing here.
So with Google, like right in teams specifically, so do they welcome your ideas like a startup would do, or do they kind of like don't do that thing?
For Google, it's they have a very open culture. They are they don't have any hierarchy, or you know, there is no discrimination amongst engineers or product managers or designers. So everybody will be treated equal. So every idea, however insane or, you know, however worst it is, I think it's always open. It's always very open to, you know, go and talk to people. You can reach to anybody, and then they'll be like super happy to help you in any other ways. So if you go and talk to someone and they'll say, hey, I know this guy is already working on that, why don't you go and, you know, talk to them? So there is these lot of people work on, you know, many interesting things, and then, you know, there may be many people will be very happy to help you, connect with you to the right people so that you can, you know, work faster. So it's a very encouraging culture they have, and that's like one of the things they call as Googliness. In Google, so that's like a term we have inside Google, where it's like, no, you have to help people succeed so that you also succeed in your work. That's like a big thing there.
That's a pretty great thing. I was reading a book recently, Creativity. It's written by Pixar's founder. So yeah, that's a really great thing. That hierarchy should not be present. And if the company is open to talk to, if anyone can talk to anyone in the company, that's a pretty good thing, because people feel that they're a part of team and not excluded in any way. So
yeah,
I think Google's doing it in a pretty great way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So why did you make a switch from engineering to design, and what challenges did you face in UX because of an engineering background?
So I luckily found out that I sucked at engineering pretty early, during my internship.
Yeah.
So I did my internship in Java, and then with a company called Bank of New York. It's called Bank of New York Mellon, and I was doing my internship in Java. And what do they usually do there is, like, you know, interns will go through a project, and then we'll also have some tests that we need to attend, and, you know, we need to pass to get our internship completed. And then out of some 10 or 12 Java tests, I almost, you know, failed 9 or 10. So I was like, I was about to, you know, be terminated from my internship. It was like that in my case. And I really wanted to do something out of engineering, because I knew that, you know, coding was not my cup of tea at all. So it was sort of for me. And then that's when I kind of found that, you know, there is this team called Design UX team inside Bank of New York Mellon, and they are kind of looking for interns to join the team. And then there was a small, you know, interview process that happened. I was given a few tests, like, you know, heuristic evaluation, and, you know, they wanted me to sketch a few screens. I did not really know that it's a heuristic evaluation, or, you know, what's the wireframe and all. So I just went ahead. They asked me to do a bunch of things. I did them, and then they pretty much liked what I did. And then they found that, you know, I had some sort of a thinking that would align it to design. So there were 15 people who attended that interview, and then 5 were shortlisted, and then we went into the design team. And then so that was like one of case. So I don't think a lot of people get that opportunity, but I was like super lucky I got that. And then that team had a 3 months classroom training where, you know, even though I did not have any design background or a design degree, they took me in, and then they taught me about design from the scratch for like 3-4 months. And then we had some on the job small projects. So we're all formally trained into user research and how to test in the usability lab, and then how to do designs, how to, you know, do presentation, and so many things. And then it took around 6 months for me with the team to kind of, you know, get on to design. And then from there, I kind of started doing my self-learning stuff from there. So yeah, that's how
So you mentioned the term heuristic evaluation. Can you please explain it a bit for the listeners?
So heuristic evaluation is basically a set of rules that was defined by Jacob and Nielsen. So those kind of give you a way to analyze a website and see if it's usable or not. So based on those rules, you can look at your website, any website, and then see if it is, like, you know, satisfying all the laws of heuristics. And then if it is there, then it's usable for the user. If it is not, then we'll have to be improved in those parameters.
Oh, that's right. It's new for me as well. Okay. So the attention span of users these days has decreased drastically due to the internet and social media. So it's around 10 seconds or so right now. So do you think that designers are responsible for this? And what do you think can be done to tackle this thing?
It's not about designers who caused this. I think it's generally how people are evolving, and, you know, how technology is evolving, and because of too many distractions that happen around us. Yeah. I think definitely we have a very, short span, I think. Even if you see, there are like 25% of apps that are getting uninstalled right after you install it in a span of first 3 days, or maybe, you know, first 4 days.
Yeah,
so people really want things very fast, quick. They want to know what the app does. They want it to be engaging. So the attention span cannot be, you know, increased, or, you know, we can't do anything about it. But I think as a designer, I think we could definitely find ways to make users use the app more, make it interesting for them, you know, make them understand the app faster, make them, you know, not get irritated with the app sooner. So I think that's definitely in the hands of the product designers and the managers.
So do you think that internet is kind of rushing things these days? What's your opinion on this?
Yeah, I think definitely there are so many content in different medias. I think we have short stories, we have short videos, we have long videos, there are posts, there are photo carousels. There are so many types of things, and then every app does the things differently, right? So there are like so many things, and then you don't really it's really hard for a user to, you know, go to all these medias and then consume these content. So I think it's definitely moving fast. I think it's definitely exponentially increasing. So the content creation and the content consumption is definitely increasing faster. So I think all the companies are moving towards these bite-sized contents, which are easy and snackable for the users. I think that's where the Gen Zs are also kind of very interested in. A lot of researchers show that, you know, Gen Zs want it in a short video form, or maybe a very snackable carousel or a story format, right? So I think, yeah, it's definitely moving. And then I think we are also, designers also inventing a lot of nicer ways to kind of consume this content faster and easily.
Yeah, that's true. The attention span is so low that I think many people listening this would have not reached this point or so. we can probably think of it this way, yeah. So, you know, design is a field that's very dynamic. Do you think in the future the definition of design will dilute with time, and there'll be more branches coming out? What's your take on this?
I think we only had something called a graphic designer 10 years back, right? And then we got someone called UX designer, and then we got someone called a visual designer, and then there comes motion designer. So I think that these branches are coming out as when the design evolves, and then the importance of design in the tech industry is kind of getting much larger, and then, you know, these branches are getting created. And then now Facebook is coming up with something called metaverse, and then, you know, there are these new set of designers they want, which are called metaverse designers, who have the sense of 3D and, you know, a bit of design, 3D and coding. So it's a very niche area to, you know, look at. So I think definitely, again, from my old point where, you know, there are so many content in different forms which are created, and then we want people to consume it. So I think definitely we need a lot of design branches and people who specialize in such branches, right? So I don't think I'm an interaction designer. I don't think I'll be able to do AR or VR right now, right? So I need to kind of ramp up. I need to study a lot of things. So I think somebody who is kind of starting off as an AI designer AR or VR designer, I think he'll be more experienced, and, you know, he'll have more expertise on that area. So I think definitely it's diluting, and then we'll have more T-shaped designers, I would say, like, you know, people who are normal at most things, but they're very specialized in one thing, right? So I think that's where we are headed to.
Yeah, because designing, it's good for sure. Because designing for virtual spaces would require a lot of things. We could think of it this way, that a metaverse is like a virtual world, right?
Yeah.
So designing for a virtual world will require to know that how societies work, how the economies are structured. So these things, designers will have to learn a lot of new stuff for that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So as stated by Mike Treff from Code and Theory, the distinction between various domains of design will continue to blur as we progress. So what's your take on this? That how would you look at it?
Various domains, you mean like industrial design and
interaction design, visual design, that stuff.
I'm not sure if that would be possible. There are you know, places where these things can intersect. Let's say skeuomorphism was a good trend in the interaction design field a couple of years back, and then we got something called minimalism. So I think some things can be kind of, you know, overlapping between these domains, but I don't think as we progress, I'm not sure. It might happen though. I think designers are really creative, and, you know, they're very
talented. Yeah.
I think they'll definitely find ways to, you know, blur these
boundaries.
Styles and boundaries between these domains. I think that would be really good. But there are certain things that you can only do on a visual screen or a digital platform. And there are some things that only work for physical objects and, you know, physical world. So there are certain things, but I think definitely it could blur. It would be nice to see how it progresses. I would love to see.
Yeah, that's great. So do you think self-learning, especially in design, will outpace the offerings from universities and colleges in the future?
Yeah, I think I'm almost certain that that will happen. Looking at the content on YouTube and other platforms like Coursera, there are like tons of really, really good stuff where, you know, you can master design in a very short space of time. There are like so many people doing some amazing stuff. There are these toolkits that you could use. There are, you know, videos that you could watch. There are so many books on design. I think definitely self-taught designers can reach goals faster in the career. They can kind of learn what's exactly necessary in the industry faster than what's happening in academia. The only, I think, upside of academia is basically they teach you the rules and the principles that you need in design, which are like the foundation of it. So yeah, that's something that's very core. But I know, I think as a self-taught designer, if you also do that, then I think there is no take for academia in this case at all.
Yeah, because learning a new skill, the best part is that if you truly immerse yourself, surround yourself with the same people as the same goals, yeah, then you will outpace the universities and the trends that are going right now. So
yeah, there are so many clubhouse, there are so many people, yeah, in clubhouse hosting some nice, you know, rooms about designs every week, and there are like so many content. There are people who actually teach you tutorials to, you know, do some nice designs faster. But I think the academia kind of gives you the foundation for design, which is really necessary. But I think once you crack that, I think then self-learning is it's really fast-paced and it's very quicker for you to, you know, progress in the career.
Yeah, if we get an internship, I think that's the best way one can learn. If he's working for a startup or a small company,
exactly.
He'll be expected to wear a lot of hats and he'll be exploring a lot of subdomains in design, and then that's the best way, according to me.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, I was just on a Twitter space right now, as you said about Clubhouse, right? So, yeah. I was also conversing about design and how is the future going to be. So, yeah, that's pretty great. So, what's your take on designers holding CEO positions at firms? Because business skills, when combined with design skills, will definitely be a stellar combination, according to me.
Yeah, that's a good one. So, I think traditionally CEOs were mostly from the engineering background, where, you know, they kind of do the hardcore coding stuff. It was there, like in let's say before 20 years or so, and then product managers took over, like, you know, Steve Jobs, Sundar Pichai. These people were product managers, and then they kind of had the product vision, so that's why they kind of, you know, went to that position. And there are a lot of good companies which had, you know, designers as CEOs, like Pinterest or, you know, Flickr. So I don't think we will be able to reach CEO position, because we designers have to have a good product thinking. Still, we need to have a long-term vision, a broader thinking of the product and the ecosystem. I think that's where designers are still evolving into. But I think definitely I know a lot of good people who are in the CDO positions. Like, you know, I know someone who went from Microsoft to SAP as a chief design officer. And then we already have a design officer at Apple, right? So I think these positions, I think, will definitely start increasing, and then it will be like almost equal to what CEO is, right? So they have a broader design vision for the product. They have like a good North Star look at what our product should look like in the next 10 years or 5 years or whatever, right? So I think we'll definitely reach there. So we are progressing there. I think the chief design officer, I think, is the first milestone for us before we get to the CEO. But I think a lot of tech companies are taking design very seriously. They know that, you know, if you need users to stay, if you need user engagement, if you need an app retention, you definitely need to have a good design sense in the app, right? So that's definitely a very serious take from all the tech companies and startups too. So yeah, we'll definitely evolve there so faster.
I think there is a fear of missing out. That's why these companies are investing a lot in design departments. So
yeah, I think it's in a good. I think it's a good way. Good way for us. Definitely, there needs to be, design involvement in the very early stages of the product. I know there are a lot of products that really you know, have a good funding raised, but you know, they really suck at design, and then they get closed, or maybe they get acquired, they go to a loss. So I think it's high time people take it very seriously.
We need to prioritize form over function for that.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's your take on increase in remote work because of COVID? So do you like it or not, and why?
Yeah, I personally like it. I'm getting a lot of flexibility in terms of work. I think people are getting adapted to this async mode of work. So people are, you know, kind of waiting for your time. I think people are having that sense of, you know, they don't really barge into your workspace and say, hey, can you do this to me? Can you do this for me? Can you show me this? Can you talk about this? So these things happen in offices where, you know, people come left, right, center, you know, whenever you're working. It's not like you don't have a fixed time for you to work, but in work, you know, in this scenario where everybody are working from home, they kind of, you know, set some time with you. They inform you earlier that, you know, hey, if you need to talk about this, maybe a half an hour, or why don't we do this tomorrow, or maybe afternoon or whatever. So that kind of waiting is happening, which is good. People are getting adapted to that model. And yeah, I'm also getting used to, you know, spending time with family. I have a lot of time to work on my personal stuff. I have some, if I have some things to do outside of my work, like, you know, if I want to give some talks, or if I want to do some podcast or whatever, so I'm able to spend some time on that too. So yeah, I think the only downside I think I see is, like, you know, the blurring between the work and the life, right? People keep extending till 8 p.m., 7 p.m., right? So that's really bad. I think people should stop working at, like, you know, if you want to put an end at 6 p.m., just put it, say that, you know, everything else can be done tomorrow. So I think that kind of a fixed boundaries, I think it will definitely increase the goodness of work from home altogether.
Yeah, that's true. Because logistically speaking, it's a great thing for companies.
Yeah.
But yeah, the work-life balance part sacrifices a bit because of that. But I think people will adapt to it because there's no choice for them, I think. So
Again, the location, right? Every company is in Bangalore, and then everybody from all the cities has to come to Bangalore, and then obviously all the you know, land prices are getting raised, and the rents are getting raised, the school fees are getting raised. Everybody are getting affected because of this, and then there is so much traffic. So this is kind of getting diverse, and then everybody are in their hometowns. You know, they are cool. Everybody are able to, you know, still contribute and work efficiently. I think there is no harm in, you know, doing this work from home for.
I think this virtual thing will also help in climate change, I think, if we scale out a bit and think of the larger issues we are having.
Because
traffic will get low.
Yeah.
People will not use their transports. So I think that's why. So one question that I wanted to ask is that, so people are very distracted these days because of the great rate of information being thrown at them.
Yeah.
So as a designer, what would you think you could do in this regard?
I think, as I already mentioned, right, there are these many platforms which has, like, many forms of media and content creation that's happening.
Yeah.
So that's why I think there are these well-being, you know, restrictions that happen on the OS level, where, you know, you can set your bedtime, you can set your app level timings, right? You can look at how much screen time that you are really working at, and then if you reach, like, 1 hour of Instagram, and then it gets locked out. So
yeah.
I think those are, like, really good things. I think companies are really working on, you know, making that better, making that even more efficient. Because I think tech companies also understand the seriousness of, you know, the screen times and what are the problems it causes. I think definitely digital well-being will be a huge thing. It's already a huge thing between Apple and Android. I think they're really working towards that. So there are these OS...
You can go ahead. Yeah.
So there are these OS level settings too. And then there are a lot of apps that have, you know, in-app settings. Like, you know, if you go to settings in YouTube, there are these options like, you know, send me an alert if I watch videos more than 1 hour at a stretch. So I think Instagram and Facebook can also do something very similar, right? So that people get notified that they are, you know, over timing on the app, and then they should take a break. So I think that's definitely need of the hour.
Yeah, that's right. So these days, people don't use the internet in a linear form. So that's what I mentioned before. they don't see just one post on Instagram or read one blog post. They're constantly jumping around here and there. Mm-hmm. On the other, marketing campaigns are structured linearly. So do you think in the future they will have to restructure?
Not necessarily. I think marketing could still happen at any point in time, right? They could have in-app marketings, and then they could have these physical marketings, digital ways of marketing. I don't think it really they really have to restructure based on how people do, because I think they have already found a lot of ways to market products in different places, right? So they have YouTube ads, and they have these Instagram promotions, and they have Twitter promotions everywhere. I think it's kind of seamlessly getting into people's feeds and people's content. So I don't think they should really be concerned about it at this moment, because they have found out a lot of ways to reach people.
But I think if they restructure, then they will have a lot of more value. Just an opinion which I have right now,
But restructure in the sense, how would you say that?
Restructuring non-linearly, just as like social media has been structured. So on the same lines as that. That's what I meant.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, fair point.
Because of distractions these days, people are very shallow and not deep in an area. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why if they restructure, it'll be great for them.
Yeah, I think lots of these ad companies and marketing companies, they do a lot of these research, like how much time should be put the ad for people to notice. And they kind of keep experimenting on each other's platform. They kind of modify their ads and promotions based on that platform, which would really be noticed by the user and which would turn into a user engagement, right? So they're very intelligent in that space. I think they are really evolving faster. I think they'll definitely find some way to kind of get into their lives. So
yeah. Designers are very creative, so yeah, they will find them for sure.
Yeah,
so do you think there will be two sides to design in the future? Designing for bespoke experiences and designing for the billions, the other people?
I don't think there will be anything to design for a bespoke user at all in the future. So it's only going to be for billions of users. Because I think all the apps should reach worldwide for them to generate revenues and for them to grow as a company, as an app. So yeah. I don't think designing for bespoke, I don't think it's a fair idea at all. Whenever the research happens, it happens for a geography or a group of people, or at least a set of similar known individuals, like let's say employees or IT employees or students or parents or educated. Or there are these certain groups that are formed anyways, and then they're kind of getting expanded to other groups, other countries, right? So that's how it happens. So one good example would be Airbnb. So Airbnb, they particularly designed for billions of users, and that's why they were able to scale to a lot of countries, and they are like huge now. So starting from inclusive design, right? So they were able to make the design very clearly, suitable for all types of languages. If you view your Airbnb app in English, Russia, China, whatever language, it kind of fits very well. They don't break at all. So those kind of, nuances are actually really important for you, for your app to reach to millions of users. I think that's the only way that you can expand and, pan across all the countries.
That's really good. What my take on is that is for bespoke experiences, I meant, so for example, we can take the example of Rolls Royce. Mm-hmm. So it's a very famous car brand and an expensive one too. So they are the ones responsible. So they offer bespoke experiences to their users, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I meant by bespoke experiences, because we could think of it as that designing for a luxurious experience. So that will be bespoke, and that will not be designing for the billion users. So that's what I meant.
So I think designing for the vast number of users, I think, takes priority than designing for a bespoke user. I think you definitely can have customizations. Like, let's say if you take Snapchat, you can customize your avatar to whatever extent, right? You can change your eyebrows, you can change your dresses, you can change your shoes and T-shirt colors and whatever. So those kind of customizations, and if you want to customize your feed or whatever, those are meant to be bespoke, right? You can customize as per your need. But I think as an app, they kind of should be targeting to a larger audience and larger groups.
Yeah, that's great. So what are your views on companies becoming as responsible as their websites because of the radical shift in design in the upcoming decades?
I think companies are evolving and evolving as, you know, the users are also evolving, right? So if you see, the digital is kind of very, evolving space. So every year you come up with a new design. There is a new design trend that happens and then everybody kind of adapts to it. Everything kind of changes. And then everybody starts adapting to it. So if you see, Stripe is a very great example of that, right? So if you take Stripe's website, they kind of benchmark the website design every year. So once you know Stripe comes up with a new design, everybody are like, hey, Stripe is having a new design language. Let's all do that, right? And then Apple is a very good example of, you know, bringing in new nuances and, you know, new design languages. And Google is another example where they kind of form a new thing and then kind of gets adapted to all companies. I think that evolution definitely will happen, and then I think definitely companies will also start doing that.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. So this was a really nice conversation for sure. And now it's time for rapid fire. And there'll be 9 questions and you have to answer each question in 10 seconds. So are you ready?
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, let's start. Favorite website?
Apple.com. I was always been a fan of Apple's website design and marketing. I think they are like the best in the world. I don't think anybody will be even able to, you know, reach near their marketing styles and, you know, their website design at all. So I think I'm a huge fan always.
Same here. I think Apple has established a brand that's kind of like a benchmark these days. So So which industry do you think design will impact the most in the upcoming decades apart from technology?
Education and travel.
Great. What's the best part about being an interaction designer at Google?
Whatever you design will be seen by the users. How many number of codes the software engineer kind of types, nothing will be seen by the user. So that's
the best part. Oh, that's the best. That's a really good way to look at it. So favorite design term?
Golden ratio.
Nice. 1.6, right? Favorite color combination?
Orange and black.
Oh, nice. Sunset or sunrise?
I rarely see sunrise, so sunset.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you when it comes to keeping secrets?
1 being low.
Yeah, 1 being low.
Yeah, maybe 2, 3.
So what's the one thing that you would like to change about yourself?
Change about myself? I think I should stop. I should reduce my screen time drastically.
That's the same with everyone, I think. Any other thing?
I should start exercising.
So texting or talking?
Texting.
Nice. It was a really great talking to you, Prashant.
Thanks, Kishore. These are like super cool bunch of questions. Very new to me. So yeah, it was really fun talking to you.
It was a great experience for me as well. Bye-bye. Cheers.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for listening. Hope you all had a great time. 9 Degrees exploring new angles. Also, we'd love to hear from you. Do drop us a review and follow us on Instagram @9degreesofficial. And yeah, do subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. Till then, stay tuned. Cheers.